everyone. Welcome to Just Jana, a podcast where each month I'll speak to a variety of industry leaders to bring you education, trends, and relevant topics in franchising. I'm your host, Jana Bailey, CEO of FranNet. Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. I'm really excited to have John Francis, also known as Johnny Franchise, as my guest today. For those of you that haven't been around the industry very long, because if you've been around the industry, you know John. So, but for those of you that might not know John, John has a lifetime of experience in franchising. His exposure to franchising began when he was just a child in his family's hair salon system, The Barbers, which was the 1,000-plus unit publicly traded and international organization that franchised the brands Cost Cutters, City Looks, and We Care Hair. He later joined the family business, playing a major role in the integration and merger of the Barbers into Regis Corporation in 1999. More than 25 years of hands-on experience in the franchise industry, John Francis has served as a franchisee, a franchisor, investor, and board member for organizations such as Sports Clips, Cost Cutters, Inner Circle, Office Pride, Siva Beauty, Big Frog T-shirts, Postnet, and the International Franchise Association. Today, John shares his perspective and expertise as a consultant, advisor, and keynote speaker to help franchise systems and professionals see what they don't see and achieve their highest levels of success. You can't tell John a franchise situation he hasn't lived or experienced. That experience will help your system. So welcome to Just Jana, John. Thank you. All of our J's here. We'll have a great time.
Well, thank you, Jana. It's just great to be with you. You know, I appreciate the opportunity to be on your podcast. I've been a listener for a long time, and I enjoy it. You know, there's always so much to learn from other folks in the franchise world. There's so many different brands and so many different perspectives, and everyone's got great experience to share. So I'm glad to be here and happy to share what I can today.
Great. Well, did I miss anything in your background you'd like to tell the audience about yourself?
Well, you know, I grew up in franchising, literally. My dad was a barber. And he franchised barbershops before I was even born. So when I was growing up, I thought everything was a franchise. I thought everybody owned two or three businesses and everybody worked for themselves except the people that worked for us. Mm-hmm. And of course, as I grew up and understood, you know, what was going on, I realized, you know, that's not exactly the case. But our franchise company really was a good example of franchising done well. We had a tremendous culture. My dad was a hardworking entrepreneur, a good leader, and just a real genuine, nice guy. And he worked hard. He worked real hard. And I've told the story that I'm lucky. I'm the youngest of five kids in my family. So by the time I was growing up, things were already going, right? Mm-hmm. He was into the salons and the franchising. And he also had other businesses and real estate, and you know, he was into all kinds of stuff. He couldn't say no to anything. And so I grew up in that environment of kind of chaos, but fun and good chaos. And, you know, it was a successful environment. You know, I had to mow the grass at home, but it was a riding lawnmower, you know. And, you know, my parents both kept their feet on the ground. You know, they stayed genuine. They stayed authentic. And all of us kids, my brother and three sisters, we all learned how to work. And if we wanted something, if we wanted money for a car or a trip or whatever, they wouldn't just give us the money. They'd give us a job to go make the money. And so I learned how to sweep the warehouse. I learned how to paint fences and pull weeds and fill dumpsters. And, you know, we had all kinds of opportunity to work really hard. And so I'm grateful for that. I learned what it takes. And I learned also from my parents, you know, how to deal with people, how to deal with franchisees, how to deal with corporate staff, how to deal with vendors and suppliers. You know, a lot of it was just osmosis, just being around it my whole life. And you know, it was a pretty good example. You know, the company grew and grew and grew and got bigger and bigger. And finally, my dad had cancer for a long time, and he was sick for a long time, and he fought like hell, and he was a great example of strength and how to deal with that situation. But along the way, he finally brought in outside management, real true professionals who knew exactly what was missing. And we added things like budgets and planning and accountability and things. So I got to live through that transition from a entrepreneurially, you know, managed organization to a professionally managed organization. And it wasn't easy. And but I lived it and I watched it and I was part of it. And I got to learn all along the way. So it was a tremendous experience for me. And then as I graduated college and got to work for real in the business, you know, I had spent a lot of time doing our family real estate business. So I started out in the real estate department, picking locations for new salons. And this is back in the 80s and late 80s, early 90s, when, you know, you still had to go out and drive a market and look at all the shopping centers and find all the
I
competitors
remember.
and do that, you know, hard labor. And it was tremendous experience. I got involved in franchise sales and development. And then I got involved in operations and finance and distribution and products and, you know, then international. I spent 5 years doing international franchise, which was fascinating. And we got some great stories when we built salons in Russia back in the 90s when it was absolute chaos. And we did some traditional international franchising in Europe. Then I got to do acquisitions. We did regional acquisitions. We rolled up different brands and converted them over and sold them off. And the last one was that We Care Hair brand was a big one. We bought 150 salons in 13 states, and that was my project to lead that. It took 2 years to integrate and went through litigation for the first time, which was an interesting education. I could tell stories all day long, but after my dad passed and my mother took over as chairman of the board, and she was well prepared. She had beefed up our board of directors, and they were very talented. So I really got exposure to that work as well. My mother doubled the size of the company and 10 times the valuation in 5 years.
Wow.
From after my dad gave her a great start and built a beautiful business to grow, she really grew it at a high level. And then I had an older brother who died in a car accident, which
Oh,
was
my
obviously
goodness.
tragic and unexpected. And that kind of upset the apple cart. And one thing led to another. My mother wanted to retire, and she wound up selling the whole company. So it changed my career path quite dramatically and unexpectedly. But, you know, I had to see the bigger picture, right? The benefits for everybody. We got a fantastic transaction, a publicly traded company merged into another publicly traded company. So it was all very transparent, but we got a fantastic multiple, almost 18 times of
Oh
our
my goodness.
earnings, which was fantastic, right? This is
What year was that, John?
1999. So it was really before private equity was a big
Yes.
deal in franchising. And you know, who knows what it would have been if it had been 10 years later. But anyway, I got a great experience. I got to dismantle our company, take it all apart, and put it all back together again inside of the larger company who acquired us. Or technically, it was a merger. But then I worked there for about 9 months and realized it wasn't the same. It was never going to be the same, and it wasn't mine anymore. And so I really didn't have the same kind of motivation. So I left, and I left on very good terms. And I had a pretty nice, you know, incentive, I guess, to make a graceful exit. And so I did. And then I took a year and a half off, just to kind of rethink and kind of get my head straight, like what's next for me. And yeah, I say that was my first retirement, right? I was 32 years old, and but I wasn't going to retire. I mean, there was no way I was done. You know, it was just kind of what I, looking back now, it was sort of phase one, you know. And so I went on after that to go do five more other brands, after that as a franchisee, as a developer, as a franchisor, as a partner and advisor, coach, speaker, whatever. And what I really learned is that the experience I had growing up in my family's business really positioned me well to help other people grow their franchises. And so I did my own, and I had my own experience, and I had a real, you know, good success. And I got really good at helping other people fix what was broken in their brands. And I guess my gift is I can help people see what they missed without making them feel stupid for missing it. And, you know, I'm kind of a, just a no nonsense, get it done, kind of let's fix this attitude. You know, I don't, so I sold my last operating business in 2013. So it's been 10 years since I had a payroll or any kind of day to day real heavy. So maybe that was sort of the second retirement. Right. And then I worked through my family, my sisters and I, and my mother, you know, we reinvested and diversified all her stuff in the family office and using real estate and other, you know, we had some really wonderful opportunities. And so I pursued all that. But that's when I started serving on boards and doing this coaching work and being very careful about, you know, where I show up and just trying to help where I can. And otherwise I get out of the way. You know, so the last few years, it's really been more, you know, I don't want to buy anything. I don't want to sell anything. I don't want to run anything. I don't want a job. I just want to help. And so I have plenty of opportunities. I've got a handful of clients that I love to work with. And the most recent thing, Jana, is this group called Zor Forum, which is a mastermind group for franchisors. And back in the old days, I was in a group, we called it a peer group for business owners.
I remember.
And had a lot of fun with that and spent almost 25 years as a member, right? So I get the value of being a member. And I helped the owner of that brand when he would go on vacation for the winter, he'd go to California and play golf. So I would run his groups while he was gone. And then when I sold one of the businesses along the way, he's like, well, what are you going to do? And he said, why don't you help me franchise this? So we franchised that brand. That was called The Inner Circle. And this was in the, I guess, the early 2000s. We franchised it, built it up, and sold that brand. And I stayed in the group because I enjoyed it so much and had some great relationships and experience. And then when Zor Forum came around a couple of years ago, I said, finally, someone's doing it in the franchise space. Mm-hmm. And so I got on real quick and I was their first franchisee of this new brand. So technically I'm a franchisee again, but I'm having a great time with these groups and helping the franchisors, you know, in not only everything I can share and give to them, but helping them work with each other and learn and share from each other. It's a fabulous environment. It fits me perfectly. And I feel like I could do this for a long time.
Well, that's wonderful. And you do bring such a depth of experience to whatever you decide to do in the industry. And you really had the perfect opportunity to learn each and everything about the businesses. So that's great, John. Is that what really inspired you to start Johnny Franchise, I guess?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Johnny Franchise was a nickname given to me by a friend of mine, Brian Schnell, a lawyer here in Minneapolis.
And I know Brian.
Yeah, and he's just a great guy. And he's a big guy, you know, physically tall and big, kind of like me. And we were at a conference here in Minneapolis. And, you know, everybody was coming in and getting their name tags and registration and everything. And Brian comes over and he says, Johnny Franchise. He said, when I see you, I think, you know, Johnny Francis, my friends and family all call me Johnny because I was really little Johnny. That was growing up. And so he called me Johnny Franchise, and everybody who was around laughed and had a good, you know, hey, that's funny. And so that for the next 3 days, that was my name, Johnny Franchise. And then I didn't really embrace it at first. I kind of thought it was, you know, there was this guy, Johnny Football, who, and I'm not a big football guy, but he was not doing that great. You know, he's kind of bad behavior and got in a lot of trouble. And so I didn't want anyone to think I was like him, I guess, in that sense. But And then, it occurred to me, some people would say, like, we'd be at IFA or something, and someone would say, "Oh, this is John Francis, but I know him as Johnny Franchise," right? It was like an inside joke.
Yep.
And I thought, well, that's pretty cool. And I asked a good friend of mine here in Minneapolis, we were talking about it, and he said, "Why don't you use that name? Why don't you embrace that Johnny Franchise?" And I said, "I think it's kind of corny." I said, "It could be kind of stupid. Who's Johnny Franchise? I mean, I don't work out of the back room of a casino or something. I'm not, and he said, "Look, it's only
Right.
stupid if you're stupid." And I said, "Well, I'm not stupid." And so it was kind of a wake-up call. He said, "It's a great brand and it fits you
It is.
perfectly. You should really embrace it." So I finally did. It was about 5 years later after Brian had given me the nickname. And so I got the website and I got the business cards and I started using it as sort of my personal brand. And it sticks and
It
it's
does.
catchy and it fits. And so I'm okay with it, it's memorable. A lot of people know me as Johnny Franchise, which I guess that's all that really matters is, and that's all I want to do is franchising. I don't really want to work in any other industry or area. This is what I do and what I love and where I think I'm most valuable. So it suits me well. And
It does.
thank you. I really appreciate it.
Everybody that knows you, that's now what they say. So, well,
Yeah.
let's switch over a little bit. I want to get a couple of things, just some nuggets for some of our listeners on your experience that will help them.
Yes.
What would you say the overall needed foundation for a successful franchisor?
Well, that's easy and complicated at the same time. So the easy part is the franchisor needs to be focused on their franchisees being successful.
Right.
Number one, if the franchisor forgets the business they're in, which is helping people be successful as franchisees, that's the business you're in. If a
Right.
franchisor can focus on picking the right people, putting them in the right location, if it's that kind of a business, or giving them the tools and training and systems and everything around running that unit level operation at a high level, they'll be a successful franchisor. When a franchisor forgets that that's the business they're in and they start thinking about themselves, they start thinking about nickel and diming the fees or making deals or any other kind of self-serving interest, they generally lose their momentum and it really doesn't work. So a franchisor needs to be focused on the franchisees. If they are committed to that and they understand that at every level, every decision you're making, is this good for my franchisees? If you really stay focused on that, you'll be a successful franchisor, no doubt about it. I guess the other thing, maybe the next step, is get the right people around you, right?
Exactly.
Have enough talent and enough horsepower, and that requires resources, capitalization. I get to work with a lot of early stage startup franchisors. People call me. I take calls all day long and I love it, right? I'll talk to anybody. And someone calls and says, "Hey, I want to franchise my whatever business." And I try to talk them out of it, frankly, because I said, "Well, that's great, but you probably don't understand the commitment, what it takes to really get things started. There's regulation and there's paperwork and there's filings and audits, and you really need to have a fair amount of money and a real commitment to focus on franchising the business takes you out of the business that you started with." So I think having that understanding that franchising is another business all on its own, and it takes a certain amount of resources, time and money and people. Pick the people that are going to embrace your brand and support those franchisees like you will. That's what I think helps make a franchisor successful.
How much money would you tell a young brand they should have to get really up and running and launched properly? What would you,
$2
I know back,
million. I
how
would
much?
say 2 million
2
today.
million.
Yeah, I
Okay.
mean, if you've got, no, I don't know if you have all that in cash or if you can borrow it or get investors or partners, which I think complicates the world far too much. Usually an operator, when a guy says, "I want to franchise my whatever," I'll say, "Great, that's wonderful. Congratulations, you got a great unit. Go build another one. Go 100 miles away and build number two
Right.
and make that successful. And then if that one is successful, go 100 miles the other way and build number three." and get three units. So I like to say the first unit successful, that's an accident. The second unit successful, that's a coincidence. The third unit successful, now that's a pattern. Now you've got the experience and the systems and the stuff that a franchisee is probably going to pay you for. And
Right.
maybe from those three units, you've got enough revenue or enough cash flow that you can now start to attract or finance the real money that you're going to need to launch a true franchise. And I say, maybe you build three or four, maybe you build five or 10, and then franchise, because you could sell those units, convert them to franchisee,
Exactly.
and get your money back and capitalize your franchise that way. When someone says, oh, they got one unit open and I'm going to buy their franchise, you know, if you don't really know what you're doing, and you know, that's very risky. So I think a lot of franchisors are unfortunately not given the really great advice. You know, there's a fair amount of people out there who just want to do the work and charge a fee and generate the whatever and move on. And so I'm a little more realistic about it because I've lived it. But at the same time, I just told you earlier, I was the first franchise of the brand that I'm in, but it's clearly not the same, you know.
Right, right.
But it you got to be careful with franchising. I've also explained franchising is like working with dynamite. You know, you can, if it's used properly, you can blow a hole through a mountain, you know, make a tunnel. But if you use it wrong, you blow your hands and your head off. You know, it's
exactly.
Powerful, and you have to use it the right way to get the right results. Otherwise, it can really do a lot of damage.
I couldn't agree more. And I feel really sorry for some of the franchisors that call us, and they've been to those people that helped them get an FDD and, you know, this little, you know, few things put together, and they think they're ready and they don't have the funds and they don't have the foundation. So I love hearing someone be as straightforward as you are, John. So on the flip side, I'm a franchisor. What characteristics should I be looking for in a franchisee? What are some of the common, I mean, I know within brands there may be little variances, but what are some common traits you want to see in a franchisee?
Yeah, well, beyond the obvious that they've got enough capital and credit,
yep,
and the ability to borrow money if they need it, you know, they have the money or they can get the money. That's part
yep.
one. But beyond the financial qualifications, I think it's more alignment with your values. You know, do they understand what it's like to be an owner? And do they understand the commitment needed to open and operate a unit? You know, people are looking to replace a job. You know, that's okay, but, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. You know,
right.
I remember when I was selling a franchise and the guy said, oh, you know, I'm talking to him, doing the thing. And he says, yeah, I'm trying to replace my income. I said, great. What, how much, you know, what is that? How much is it? Oh, about 85,000. Okay, well, that's great. I said, this franchise costs about 200,000. This a few years ago. I said, $200,000, you want to make 80,000. When do you want to make 80,000? And he's like, well, right away. I said, oh, okay. Let me get this straight. Then you want about what is that? Like a 40% return on investment from the beginning. I said, if you can find one that does that, call me back because I'll buy 10 of them, right? It's unrealistic. You might make 80,000 with this business, but it's not going to happen the first year. It's probably not going to happen the second year. You know, it's going to take a little while and a fair amount of money and an awful lot of time. And so you got to be prepared for that. So I think having realistic expectations is what I'm saying, that a franchisee needs to really understand what's involved and what it takes and how long it takes. And do they have the skills and the ability to execute? You know, I've been in a lot of stuff. I see a lot of stuff. And, you know, a lot of brands these days where sales is a big part of the function. You know, franchisee, it's a sales process to get clients or customers or whatever the business they're selling. And if somebody's really uncomfortable with sales, don't buy that kind of a franchise. You know,
exactly.
Buy something that's more product-based or whatever. You know, they're not dependent on the skills. So you got to have the right skills. You got to have the right values. You got to have the right understanding of the commitment and resources necessary. And then I would say understand the benefits of being a franchisee. It means you're not alone.
Right.
Use the system. Ask for help, ask for training, talk to other franchisees, talk to the other vendors. I think franchising has a lot of secret benefits that are oftentimes under or misunderstood or not well understood until you're in a brand a long time. There's a lot of things you can do to accelerate your growth and your understanding as a franchisee if you're in the right kind of brand that fosters that kind of integration and communication. The best franchisees are always asking for things, but they realize they won't get everything they ask for. But as long as you're constructive and positive and willing to do the hard work, it's not that hard to be successful as a franchisee, as long as you have the right perspective and the right level of commitment, and you'll do whatever it takes to make it. I've done it several times, and I like to help other people do it for themselves. A lot of the times I get involved when things are going wrong. People call me and I'm like the fixer, like, well, we're struggling, this guy's upset, or we got this going on, or there's an association that's forming. I'm like, oh, geez, what do we get? So we
Oh,
go in
yeah.
there and I do my work and figure out what's causing the problem, And a lot of times it's just misalignment of values. They don't have the same values. And those are hard to correct. You got
It
to be
is.
very careful to get people back on track and or show them the way out and say, look, a franchise agreement is not a life sentence. You can parole yourself out of this deal and sell the business to someone who gets it,
Right.
So I don't know. That's probably a lot more than you wanted, but that's as a franchisee, it's important they understand what they're getting involved with.
Well, from that's what we work with all the time is trying to match up the franchisors. And it is, it's like matching the values. It's being sure that you have someone that'll follow the system. It's looking at the skill set. Like you said, do they need sales and they're not comfortable in sales? Well, that's not a match, and being sure they go through that. So there is a lot that we tell people to think about. And one of our big ones, John, is understand the day in the life of that franchisee. And if you're not going to be happy in that role, you're going to be miserable. You're going to fail. So I think being happy there is important. So I'm gonna we you and I could do this for like 2 hours. So, but I'm gonna ask you one more question. What is a key piece of advice you can share with aspiring franchisees, or individuals that are looking to improve their existing franchise business? What is something you would say to them?
That's a really good question. Hard to boil it down to one thing, but if I had to focus on sort of one thing, I would say understand the economic model of your business. What drives profits? What drives costs? What are the levers and knobs that you can adjust to improve the performance? I've seen units that are super high volume. They're on stage winning all the high achievement awards, but they're not really making any money.
Right.
And there's way more to success than high volume. It's got to be the complete economic model. So understand your business model inside and out, front to back, top to bottom. And if you don't understand it, ask for help. Ask from the franchisor, ask from the accounting people, ask other franchisees. If you really understand the economic model of what drives that business performance, then you know where to focus.
Yes.
And I'm a big fan of benchmarks and analytics and dashboards and all the technology that's available today is fantastic. The stuff we used to do by hand
Yep.
with spreadsheets that would take all day, but we'd crunch out the numbers and say to the franchisee, here's your top three things. You need to work on this and this and this. Nothing else. Don't work on anything else until you get these into the proper range. If these factors are into the right range, the high, low, medium, and you drive the performance into that, then you can focus on the next. The next three are going to be this, this, and this. And so focus on the economic model and improving your unit level performance. Don't build another one and try to grow your way out of
No.
it. If you have one unit that struggles, fix that thing first. Because you build another one or another two or three or four or 10 or whatever, you get way over your skis and you created it's a tragic outcome when people get overextended.
It is.
And I think the other side of that, don't be consumed with growth in order to flip a brand. I see this on the franchisor level, and I see it
Happening a
on the
lot.
franchisee level, where people just want to put dots
Definitely.
on the map as fast as they can and sell the whole thing. And that kind of just bothers me, because I think, there's nothing wrong with having a nice business and holding on to it for a while and enjoy that success. When we sold our family business, it was 37 years old,
Wow.
right? That's a long run. And that was 25 years ago. Imagine if we still had it. So I think that people need to play the long game.
I see.
It's not just this month, this quarter, this year. Think about what you can do to improve your performance this week, this month, this quarter, this year, but also next year and the year after and the year after. And after you have some real understanding, then be very careful, but go ahead and expand. Build a second unit as a franchisee. Build a third unit. At a certain level, you can add layers of management, which makes your life a lot easier as the operator. In the salon business, it used to be you had to get at least three units open, then you could have a manager of the managers,
Yes.
and then they could manage about five, maybe six. So then you want to build three or four more, and three or four more. We had franchisees that had, lots and lots of stores, and they had layers and layers of people, but those people were all in alignment, and they all understood what it took to be successful, and they created some fantastic businesses. But it took a long time and a lot of work. It didn't happen quick, and it certainly wasn't easy. But find a brand that's built that way. I've seen people who get into a franchise and they think, oh, I'm going to have five or six of these. And I would say, really, that's great. How many other franchisees have five or six of these? Nobody. Well, then you don't want to be the first one. If you got to have multi-units to scale to the level you're interested in, make sure that model is built to scale that way.
Right.
If it's a single unit owner operator kind of business model, you might get one, maybe you could have two. You kill yourself to get to three, but you'll never get to 10 because the model just doesn't allow it.
Yep.
So know what you're buying if you're really going to scale at that level, and be real thoughtful about it on the front end. I don't know. I see a lot of things that just don't make sense to me, and you wonder how people get there. And I ask them, how'd you get here? And they tell me the story, and then I tell them what they missed, and then how to fix it. I'm like the fixer, but I think that's the number one thing for the franchisees. Know that unit level economics, figure out what drives that business model, and then learn how to make yours perform better.
Perfect. Well, and same is true for the, franchisors. This applies to you too. And, John, I love what you said about building more before you even franchise. I talk about proof of concept, and a lot of franchisors haven't really proven out that concept before they try to start bringing on franchisees. And it's just a recipe for disaster. So
Yeah, those franchisees can be a real challenge. So I'll say this. I think it's applicable to all sides, is your first five franchisees set the pace for
yes,
the
they do.
next 50. And those 50 set the pace for the next 500. So when you're new and starting out, you got to be very selective and very careful that you get some successful operators who really understand what they're doing and how to do it, because you can't afford a mistake in those first five. And then maybe you can afford a mistake, but you'll get to 30, 40, 50. Then it's a whole different ball game to
Yeah.
get, they go through phases and levels of growth, the old phrase, what got you here won't get you there, and that is so very true. And a lot of franchisors kind of understand that, but maybe they don't recognize it because they're in it. And
Right.
so a guy like me comes along, and in about 10 minutes, I ask enough questions to make him realize that, oh, geez, we are in trouble. I'm like, well, at least now you know it, so now we can do something about it.
Yeah.
It's worse if you don't know, and or then you just ignore the facts. So if you understand it and someone can point you in the right direction and help you transition to that next level of growth, that's what I like to do.
Well, John, you're an asset to the industry, and I'm sure the brands that work with you say the same thing. So I am thrilled to have had this opportunity with you today. And so for our listeners, any of you that would like to get in touch with Johnny Franchise, let me know and I'll be glad to point you in the right direction. So, John, I'm going to close today by saying thank you, thank you, thank you for all you do for the entire industry.
Well, thank you, Jana, for having me. I really appreciate it. You can tell I enjoy it, and happy to share what I can with you and your audience anytime. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thanks everyone for joining us today for this episode of Just Jana. Hope to see you on again soon.